Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
Welcome to hour number two of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. Thanks again to Chairman for the House Judiciary Committee, one and only Jim Jordan, for being on the show with us. And now I have one of his colleagues in the House with me. He is the Speaker of the House. My guest has served as the 56th Speaker of the United States House of Representatives since 2023. He is now the man at the center of the longest government shutdown in American history. He is Mr. Mike Johnson, and he's on the show with us right now. Speaker Johnson, it's an honor to have you, sir. How are you?
Stephen, it's great to be with you. Congrats on the new show. It's still kind of new, I guess.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to be on later tonight with our good buddy, Sean Hannity. I'll tell him you said hello.
Well, my condolences, because he's crazy. I wish you all the luck in the world when it comes to that guy. But let me get right to it. First of all, when is this shutdown going to end, Speaker?
I wish I could tell you. Really, the only person that can answer that is Chuck Schumer, because he leads the Democrats in the Senate. And as you know, because you're keeping the score, they voted 15 times now to keep government closed, 15 different occasions. They've made it the longest in history. I don't know if that was the objective all along, but real pain is being felt by real people. And it's getting more and more painful by the hour. We've got to break the impasse. But here's the thing, Stephen, as you know, because you're tracking this, we sent them a totally clean, nonpartisan CR. I know that sounds like, legislative speak to people back home. But what it means is we filed the simplest possible measure. It was only 24 pages in length to just keep the government in operation so that we could finish the appropriations process, the government spending bills for the year, and negotiate what remained on the calendar for the end of this year. Healthcare was one of those things. There were lots of issues. But this is the way it's always been done. And the Democrats always have done it in the past. They did it 13 times during the 4 years of the Biden administration. But now suddenly they wanted to pick a fight because they had to show that they were tough to what I think is the Marxist rise in their party. And they're running scared because of that.
I was getting ready to ask you, verbally speaking, not anything they hint towards anything. What do they actually say is the reason they haven't signed the CR?
Well, they claim that this is a fight about healthcare. But it's not true. And everybody here on the Hill knows it's not true. What they're trying to say this is about is the expiration of the Obamacare COVID era subsidies. It expires at the end of December, December 31, not the end of the fiscal year, September 30. So they needed something to claim that what this was about. And they globbed onto that. It's not legitimate. It's not real. We were always planning, every Republican and every Democrat in the building, Senate and House, knew that we were going to have to work our way through that complex issue in October, November, December, before the end of the year. They tried to claim that it's about that. That's a red herring. That's a distraction. The real reason, and this is just the honest truth, is that Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are both from New York. We saw what happened in New York City last night. We see the rise of the activist kind of socialist base in the party. It terrifies the old guard here on Capitol Hill. And both of those guys are concerned they're going to get a challenge from a Mondani disciple in their next election cycle. So they had to show a fight. They had to pick a fight. And this is one they chose.
What about the notion that they did this and they've been holding out because they knew that the election was coming up and that it would look as if the GOP was the ones that were most culpable in all of this and it would work for them in the election? I think it stands to reason that that might have had something to do with it when you consider the fact that Zohra Mamdani just won the mayoral seat in New York. And obviously you got Sherelle and Spanberger that won the gubernatorial seats in New Jersey and Virginia, respectively.
Yeah, look, but there were no surprises last night. I mean, blue states and blue cities elected blue candidates. I mean, that was what everybody expected, frankly. Anything else would have been a surprise. I don't think we should read too much into the results last night or into the results of any off-year election, because they almost never indicate what will happen in the upcoming year. We know the big contest is the midterm elections next fall. We are very bullish about that on my side of the aisle because we have a lot to show. We've got a great record to run on. We've been delivering on our promises to the people. And Stephen, in the last election cycle, last fall, we had a true demographic shift. I mean, a real historic shift in the electorate where we had a record number of Hispanic and Latino voters and Black and African-American voters and Jewish voters and union workers, all these demographics. And we're going to prove to them they made the right choice, and they'll have time to evaluate that before next November. And I think it's going to go well for us.
I'm wondering how concerned that you are going to prove that, because I'm looking at the president right now. Like, listen, I've seen the tariff wars. I mean, there's pledges, but they ain't guarantees. I don't disagree with what he did with the border, because I never thought Biden should have opened the borders. So I'm gonna be on the record right now. Okay, how unpopular it is. I agreed with him. I understood. Once Biden opened the borders, you got to do something to close it. You can't have all of that happening. Not in this country. We get that part. But I also know that the manner in which it's been handled, particularly by ICE, you know, in terms of people being grabbed in the streets, everybody's not criminals. Everybody's not here illegally. And I think the optics and how bad it has looked has served to scare some of the American citizens that the level of chaos that exists in the streets of America right now, to some degree, could somehow, some way mirror what we saw during his first term, and that kind of scares people as well. I want to know, does people like yourself and others, have you thought about that? Have you talked to the president about that?
Yes, look, we're aware of the optics, and we're trying to do the right thing by the American people. That's the promise we made last November. The president ran on it. The border, the open border, and the chaos that it created, as you know, was really the number one issue in the election last fall. And we went out and promised that we would bring order back to the chaos, and that we would fix that. We would stand for the rule of law. If you don't have a secure border, you don't have sovereignty as a country. And everybody understood that. We checked the box. As you know, Stephen, I mean, we've had almost zero illegal alien crossings over the border in the last several months. And that's because we have a commander in chief who's taken it seriously. And now we have to deal with the estimated roughly 20 million people who came across that border unlawfully. Now, you got to do it in the right way. We want to go after the hardened criminals and get them out of the country. That's like a 90%, you know, poll of the issue. But you got to be careful about maintaining the rule of law, ensuring that people are following it. And the White House is well aware of that. We are too. But I would say this, comparing the two parties as we go into the next election cycle, we really do have a split screen. I mean, just consider the last 9 or 10 months, you know, the beginning of this Congress, the beginning of the new administration. On one side, you got President Trump and the Republicans, and they're delivering for the people. I mean, we solved the border crisis. We're trying to solve the crime crisis in creative ways. We cut taxes. We cut regulations. Fraud, waste, and abuse in government. I mean, we got energy, American energy dominance going again. We got new trade agreements more favorable for the country. And the president is solving wars around the globe. He's up to 8 or 9 now. And on the other side of the screen, you got the Democrats. And what can they say they accomplished in 9 months? They shut the government down. You know, they pushed some ICE officers around. They inspired political violence. I mean, this is not hyperbole. This is the real comparison between the two. I like our chances going into the election because we're working for the people and we can show it.
We're talking to Republican out of Louisiana, one-on-one speaker Mike Johnson right here with Stephen A. on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene appeared on ABC's The View on Tuesday. She says she blamed you, sir, for not bringing the House back into session, calling it, quote, an embarrassment. I guess the question would be, why won't you call the members back? And number two, how do you feel about what she directed directly at you?
I'm not unaccustomed to hearing criticism from Marjorie. We have intense fellowship, as we see in the Deep South, Stephen. And she knows I've got an open door. She can come in and talk with me anytime. But, you know, she goes on these shows. She likes to get the big interviews, and that's fine. Everybody has the right, you know. But I'll tell you this. I'm in constant contact with all the House Republicans. And the reason we've not brought them back yet is because we did our job. We passed the clean, nonpartisan continuing resolution on September 19th. And we're now waiting for the Senate to do their job. Chuck Schumer and the Democrats have held off on that. They voted against it. They don't want to open the government. And so we can't do anything until we fulfill that most basic function. I mean, that's the most basic responsibility of the Senate and the House of the Congress, is to make government work for the people, to keep it open, to keep the services flowing and the troops paid and all the rest. And so that's the first order of business, and anything else is just a side issue. So I will tell you, I have a weekly conference call with all the House Republicans, and I talk to them more often. 99.5% of all the House Republicans understand exactly what we're doing and why. Marjorie has a difference of opinion. That's up to her, you know.
Right. But why is it that you're sounding like there's absolutely nothing you can do? Like there's nothing you can do? I mean, if the Democrats don't agree with this, this is what it is. The government's going to be shut down, and there's absolutely no recourse that you have available to you in your arsenal at all. You or President Trump, who I call the art of the deal. I do that facetiously because I'm getting on him. I can do that. I've known him before he was became the president. The art of the deal, a guy that can make a deal, that can figure out a way to get a deal done. Where's that guy with all of this right now? While federal employees are not being paid.
I'm glad you asked. I mean, he is the great deal maker, and he tried before this began. Remember, we had that fateful meeting where Leader John Thune in the Senate, I, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, the two Democrat leaders, we all went to the Oval Office. He brought us all in, and we sat right across Resolute Desk. And the president tried to make a deal with those guys. And he said, guys, don't close the government down. It doesn't help anyone. It hurts the American people. And they just basically gave him the middle finger, Stephen. I mean, that's what happened. And so they walked out. And the president said, these guys don't want to make a deal. They want to shut the government down. And that's what they've proven over and over. So you're asking me why I'm not negotiating right now. Here's the simple truth. There is nothing that I can pull off of that continuing resolution to make it more palatable for the Democrats. Because guess what? I didn't put a single Republican partisan priority or policy on that measure at all. In fact, Stephen, this is so important. This CR, this continuing resolution, continues the government funding at the current levels, which is the Biden-era policies and spending. I mean, literally, it's the Democrats' stuff that they're voting against. So there's nothing I can do to go make it better. I have nothing to negotiate. I literally don't have anything I can pull off of that. And that's the whole problem here. Again.
No, there's people that's going to look at the Republican side now, not just the Democrat side. We, you know, because you got people think they have an agenda. They wanted to, you know, they wanted the voters to have to show that they have voters' remorse for voting Trump in the office. They wanted to use this for the election and gain an advantage. There's a whole bunch of reasons that people throw out about the Democrat side. On the Republican side, people look at y'all and they say, you know what, the American public are going to question the level of seriousness that you guys have about governing, accusing y'all of grandstanding to some degree. How are you going to answer the American public as those sentiments grow in your direction?
Well, we've done the opposite of grandstanding. I mean, I have a live press conference every single morning, and I go out in front of the American people, and, you know, Fox News carries it live, other stations do as well every morning. We take questions from the press and we just look straight into the camera, Stephen, and tell them the simple truth. The truth is very simple. We have laid bare all the cards. Everything's out on the table. We gave a simple nonpartisan measure to keep the government in operation so Congress can do its job here and finish everything else. I don't have a political strategy. I'm not playing a game here. I'm just trying to keep the government in operation. It's the Democrats who are engaging in this campaign of misinformation and doing this. And I know it sounds like a he said, she said thing. But the American people are smart, and they can watch the tally. They can watch the scoreboard. 15 times, House and Senate Republicans have voted to open the government. 15 times, Democrats have voted to close it. And I mean, that's the score. That's the reality, and that's the thing they can't get around.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Representative Jordan about specifics in regards to the finances. You know, we can talk all day, the Affordable Care Act, subsidies, they're going to double, the premiums are going to double, et cetera. We've heard all of that. That's us talking. We're not the Speaker of the House of Representatives. You are. Paint the picture. Obamacare, what it cost then, what it was supposed to cost, what it ended up costing, what we're anticipating it's going to cost, really to articulate and illuminate the urgency of dealing with this healthcare crisis we got in this country. Could you paint a financial picture, the numbers, throw it out there for my audience to hear so we can understand?
Yeah, I will. It is a crisis, and it's not created by Republicans. I mean, that's the biggest political gaslighting in the history of America. Remember that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, is exactly the opposite. It's been the Unaffordable Care Act because from the time it was enacted in 2010, by most estimates, premiums have been risen by 60% in most categories. I mean, healthcare is unaffordable and it's increasingly inaccessible because the system doesn't work. And the Democrats' response to that is to subsidize. Stephen, you know, when the government is subsidizing something, it means it's not working on its own. They got to prop it up. Well, they want to extend the COVID era Obamacare subsidy, which is really a subsidy to insurance companies. And you know what happens when you subsidize insurance companies? It drives the cost up even further. So we need real reform to make healthcare affordable again, to increase quality, increase access to care for more people. The Republican Party is the party trying to do it. We're the only ones that have ideas on the table to do that. The Democrats just want to keep doubling down and spending more tax money to prop up a broken system. I'll give you a quick example. This is not just talk from us. We did it. In the One Big Beautiful Bill, the Working Families Tax Cut, in the House version that we passed and sent over to the Senate, we had what's called a cost-sharing reduction, a CSR provision in there. It would have driven, according to the Congressional Budget Office, not Republicans, it would have driven the average premium down in America by 12%, and it would have saved taxpayers about $30 billion over 10 years. The Senate Democrats fought to take that provision out of the bill, so it didn't make it in the final legislation. By comparison, okay, remember I said that would have dropped prices, premiums by 12%, and saved about $30 billion. If you extend the Obamacare subsidy, the COVID-era subsidy, as they're trying to do, without any reforms, It will only reduce premiums by about 5.7% on average, and it will cost the taxpayers $358 billion additional dollars. Look, we have real ideas to fix it. We actually published booklets full of ideas. We got to build consensus around it, and it's a very complicated thing because healthcare is very complicated. It's a big percentage of the U.S. economy. We have to do it right, and Republicans are the ones that will lead us out of that wilderness.
Thanksgiving is in 3 weeks, sir. SNAP benefits are being cut in half, as we all know, but they're talking about how it'll take weeks or even months for recipients to get them. Could you explain why that is?
Yeah, it's a great question. The easiest way to stop all this chaos and get SNAP benefits rolling right now is for Democrats to come in here tomorrow and vote to reopen the government. But if they don't do that, we're relying upon a contingency fund. Here's the problem. It's math. It's about $9 billion a month to cover SNAP benefits. We got about 42 million recipients on that, right? There's only $5.2 billion in the contingency fund. So you got about half of what you need. So in order to get to even use the contingency fund, as the courts have ordered to be done, the states have to recalculate and adjust their systems to send out partial payments. It's not going to be enough. It's going to be a long lag time to get that done because it's an unprecedented situation. And that's why we're appealing to the Democrats. Stop causing the pain. Just get the government open. We're not asking you to vote for any Republican priority. We're just saying, do what you have always done. Do what you did 13 times during the Biden administration. And Chuck Schumer and 10 Democrats in the Senate did as recently as March of this year. Chuck Schumer himself went on the floor, Stephen, and gave an impassioned speech. Said, we have to do the CR. We have to keep the government open. Because
this is last March.
Yeah, this is March. This is like 8 months ago.
This is last March.
Yeah. And the same guy now has dug his heels in and says we can't reopen. I mean, it's just, it's a 180. And again, the only explanation is that he's worried now. He's more afraid of the radical rise of the base in his party than he is making people go without food. I mean, that sounds harsh, but that is a reality.
If Donald Trump were not president, would this be happening? What I mean by that is that the last time there was a shutdown this long, it was his first term. Now it's happening in his second term. And you guys, I see you guys religiously calling it deranged, you know, Trump deranged syndrome or something along the line. There we go. So I'm asking it based off of that flavor, the kind of things that y'all have been saying. If Donald Trump were not president, do you believe that the Democrats would be this rigid in their thinking, in your estimation?
No way. No. I mean, that's the whole point, is they're trying to show that they're willing to fight Trump to their base and they'll pick a fight over anything or nothing. Some people call this the Seinfeld shutdown because it's really about nothing. I mean, that's the whole point. But I can tell you this. This is my exhibit A in my case that I'm making to you. We don't do this. I was speaker under President Biden. We did not shut the government down. I mean, I got a lot of pressure from my angry part of my base to do it, but it would be too dangerous for the people. And we were going to do the right thing. We're not going to make troops go unpaid and TSA agents and Border Patrol agents and air traffic controllers. We're not going to stop SNAP benefits and nutrition supplements for women, infants, and children. We wouldn't do that. So we took tough votes. We voted for Biden policies and spending because we care about the people. And the Democrats are demonstrating every day here, they have a very different priority, and it is themselves and their own political survival. That's what this is about.
Speaker, before I let you get on out of here, I'd be remiss in neglecting to not ask you this question. You haven't sworn in Arizona representative-elect Adelita Grijalva yet. Why do you have to follow the Pelosi president? Because I heard you allude to that. A lot of people think that you guys, particularly you by name, are stalling when it comes to this. What do you have to say to that?
We're not stalling. I mean, that precedent is not just hers, it's previous speakers as well. What happens here is that when somebody's elected in a special election, that's what she was, she fulfilled the seat of her late father, which is a great honor to her. You wait until you're back in regular session to do it. I cite Pelosi because she did it a number of times. Like, for example, when they had special elections filled during an August recess for Congress, she would logically wait until the next month when everybody came back to get into session to do it. I'm anxious to administer the oath to her, and we will. But we got to get the lights turned back on here first and get Congress open and operating for the people so that we can get all this done. We got a lot ahead of us. There's no other objective here. I'm just trying to follow the regular order. By the way, she can serve her constituents in every capacity right now. She's got a full staff. She's got offices and computers and phones, and she can be doing what everybody else is doing right now as the rep elect until we just go through the formality of administering the oath.
But what she can't do is go on the Hill and vote as a member of the Democratic Party to have the Epstein files open, which is what people bring up as a reason as to why she hasn't been sworn in yet. To that, you say what?
Yeah, it's another red herring, total distraction. It's a moot point now. Look, the House Oversight is doing a full in-depth investigation, and they're delving through the Epstein files and releasing them. I mean, people have lost track of this, but there's 43,000 pages of that stuff out in the public on the website right now. Two Fridays ago, a little over a week ago, they released the latest Epstein estate files, which is his personal logs, his calendars, his flight records, flight logs, his financial records, and all the rest. We've got subpoenas that are being supplied, answered right now. And the more the information comes in, the more it's released. The only thing that's being redacted right now is the names of young women, the victims who went through these horrific crimes as a result of these sex trafficking operations. And we have to protect them. But that's the only thing that's being withheld. So it's all out there. And more is coming. And I can tell you, the House Oversight Committee is filled with some of the biggest guard dogs in Congress on the Democrat and Republican side. And they've got their teeth sunk into this thing deep. So it's already happening right now. I mean, that's just a non-issue.
Very last question for you. So regarding the filibuster and President Trump, I saw him speaking this morning, and he wants it eliminated in the Senate. He's basically saying that's the only way anything will get done in order to pass, the record-breaking number of bills and circumvent Democratic obstruction, as he called it. What are your feelings about that, eradicating the filibuster and just moving forward without needing 60 votes? What are your thoughts about that?
He and I have talked about this a lot, and what you're hearing is an expression of his anger and frustration that the Democrats won't reopen the government. He doesn't want the American people to hurt. We don't either. And desperate times call for desperate measures. But I reminded him that what a lot of the Senate Republicans believe, that's not a House issue, it's a Senate issue, but what they believe is that it's a very important safeguard against the worst impulses of the Democrat Party. My Republican colleagues will say that because they say, sir, they've already told us what they would do without the speed bump of the filibuster. If they ever took over again, they would expand the Supreme Court, pack the court. They'd go to 13 or 15 judges or whatever they wanted. They'd make Puerto Rico and D.C. states. They would do, Second Amendment restrictions. They would nationalize federal elections, just go on and on and on, and there'd be nothing to stop them. And so I think the fear on both sides of the aisle, to be fair, has kept the filibuster as part of the tradition. The founders intended the Senate to be what they referred to as the cooling saucer, right? The House would be hot, lots of activity and lots of emotion, and it would go over there and it was supposed to simmer and cool so cooler heads prevail in the Senate. If you take the filibuster away, that doesn't exist anymore. And we would have massive whiplashes for the people between elections, between the parties, and that wouldn't be good for the system.
Speaker Johnson, appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I'm going to let you get on out of here and brace yourself for dealing with Sean Hannity because he's a mess. I know that's going to be tough for you. But anyway, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And just want you to know, as I say to both sides of the aisle, you're always welcome here. I don't take sides. I don't give a damn about all of that. You got something to say? I want you to know that you got a platform here to come and speak, you and everybody on your side of the aisle, anytime you please. So please know that. And thank you so much for coming on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I appreciate it.
It's an important public service, my friend. Keep it up. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. All the best to you. One and only Speaker Johnson, Republican out of Louisiana, right here on Stephen A. Smith Show. Speaker of the House, you heard what his position was. You heard where he stood. You heard what Representative Jim Jordan said and where he stood. We know from last week where the Democrats stand on it. We heard from Akeem Jeffries the week before that. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm here for it. The number to call up is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-BOTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A., courtesy SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Back with your calls and more in a minute.